It is. We're just a tiny bit early, but I'm really delighted to have Rod Wise, publisher for the Armidale Times, in the studio. Morning, Rod.
Good morning, Margaret.
How are you going, Rod?
It's pretty good, actually.
Rod's looking at me with a very quizzical look. I think wondering where we're going to start. Look, this is edition number 38, Rod. Congratulations. You're still behind the Yarrella Wordsworth in terms of numbers.
Well, when we started off, number one, Yarrella Wordsworth was number 42. I never remembered that. Forgotten that. I don't know what they are now, but they'd be up and around the 100, wouldn't they? Or over 100.
Oh, they're going. Well, they go every fortnight, so yeah. they double your.
They're twice a plot, you know. It's a plot.
It is. It is. But I mean, you are completely different because what you do is look at these really curly issues that we need to think about that don't actually get much media coverage in the online paper or the print version.
No, they don't.
Of the commercial media. So,
yeah.
And so you and Ginny really dig deep into what's going on behind the scenes. And also, I think, looking at the economic issues underlying our community.
They don't disappear, you know. You can have all the things on the surface, like call them rail trails or reses, and those sorts of things. But unless the actual community is generating wealth in itself, that will just come and go. It'll just be passing stuff. What's happened here is that the essential economic foundation of the place has been gutted. And if you look back at it, there was basically two pillars, quite apart from all the shearers coming to town. There were two pillars of this place. One was the educational system, which has been trashed, and the other was the Armidale's role as the administration of the centre of public administration in northern New South Wales. And since the Greiner government in 1988, that's been progressively stripped away. So there's actually the function of Armidale now is to service those people who still live here. That's essentially what it is.
It's really interesting, isn't it, that there seems to have been, people say, you know, oh, why aren't we more like Tamworth, with, you know, Tamworth's looking at 50,000 people and growing. But I mean, it's in a completely different area. But that, as you say, that pullback of government services,
that was the thing that hurt Armidale more than anything.
Back down to Tamworth and then across to the coast. I mean, there are some services that are now delivered through the Northern River.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Tamworth also was the metal fabrication centre for North and Northwest, and it just chimed in perfectly with the advent of mining up in northern New South Wales. It was tailor-made for it.
And, of course, now what we're seeing, there was that $24 million that was basically taken out of the salaried positions at the UNE.
At UNE, yep.
And strangely enough, the same amount, about $24 million, is now being ploughed into the new campus at Tamworth.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can't blame universities are federally funded, that they have been forced to be extremely competitive. They're now, if people don't know, they're now operating in sort of networks of partnerships of universities, and those are very competitive. And I think that if the UNE had not placed, investment in Tamworth for the UNE and its network of unis, another one would have come in, and that was very much the strategy of the Tamworth Regional Council.
Yeah, well, you know, there are, I think one of those towns along the north coast, one of those substantial ones, it now has a college of Charles Sturt University from Wagga.
Charles Sturt's quite aggressive, and they cover similar areas.
This is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous, honestly.
Yeah, so what happens is that you get a federal level of government creating so much competition and so much difficulty and financial uncertainty. I mean, I remember this from about 15 years ago here. So the universities are gasping for air or gasping for money, and so they've got to make quite harsh decisions. That brings them into conflict to a certain extent with the community that has been hosting them for many years, like ourselves, but I don't think Armidale's a unique case. And then what happens next? But the problem is that unless other levels of government actually give corresponding levels of investment into regions, but if they just withdraw services or make it so competitive for the existing services here to maintain themselves in this place and kind of invest into the area, what do?
We're facing an economic crisis that's kind of
government generated.
Well, it is, because the tax base of the whole country has been trashed.
Yeah.
Just so that people can buy an extra, jet ski to go jet skiing in. Mm. You know, there's all the jets. I like picking them up because they're so absurd, such an absurd thing. But so
during flood times, a lot of those.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, when we had that terrible crisis in Lismore, a lot of private vessels, small vessels, jet skis and other things were being used by ordinary civilians to rescue people because emergency services were inadequate.
It sounds like the spirit of Dunkirk, doesn't it?
Well, it was.
Yeah.
In fact, even the local member, Janelle Sappin, was picked up off a tree.
I didn't know that.
No, she went for a swim in the river. The flood rose so highly that her electoral office was, and she was a young fellow civilian in a boat, saw Janelle hanging off a tree.
Gee, that'd be a bit scary, wouldn't it?
Mm. And she's not young.
No.
And she was rescued by one of these, civilian heroes in a little recreational tinny, I think.
Right.
And, so...
Well, I withdraw my nasturtiums about...
without that level of mobilisation... And which included jet skis.
Let's hear it for jet skis.
Yes. Anyway, look, we've got another little bit of a... it's not little. It's a really big issue, isn't it?
It's a huge issue.
It's if people don't know what REZ stands for, and you may not, it's the Renewable Energy Zone, and it's one of five, I think, in New
South Wales. Well, I think it is about five. I wrote quite a lengthy piece about it a couple of years ago when it was really starting to cause some angst around down at Walca, that's the first I really sort of looked at it, and I must say the thing that really stood out, and you'd have to say, why here? There's no prevailing winds up here. Like, I'm not sort of knocking it. I'm not knocking it at all per se. I might knock it the way it's been delivered.
It's very hit and miss, the delivery.
But the thing that I found bizarre was that there's only one place in New South Wales, in eastern Australia, where there is the height and the prevailing winds all year round, and that's down in the Alps. And there's none down in the Alps.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I thought,
snowy mountains. There is none down there, and that's where they should be. And because it's the most, ephemeral winds. It's constant westerly winds growing there, blowing there all the time. Yeah. And I thought, well, I've been in journalism too long. Maybe I'm getting too cynical. And I thought to myself, well, if it's such a good idea, why didn't the local member, the Deputy Premier John Barilaro, want it in his own electorate?
Strangely. Also, there's certain people that own ski resorts down there.
Well, they wouldn't like it, would they?
I don't know. All I know
but
is
apparently we do like it. We like.
We just love to have these huge turbulent cars.
Well, 300 metres tall.
I must say, I did go... the front page is talking, for those people who haven't got it in front of them, and they won't... we're talking particularly about the planned Borlaug wind farm, and that is a plan for 107 turbines.
And there are others around there too. There's at least two other as well, which will add to that.
Warani Station is one that's likely to... Well, now that it's owned by Origin Energy and EDF Renewables at Yarrowick. So we've got a really substantial cluster of... When I heard that they were planning on 300 metre high turbines, which are the tallest ever. That's the tallest that's ever been built. And they don't even know, as I understand it, they don't even know how to do that yet.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Because the people out there...
How to get them that tall,
The people out there are absolutely going bananas. They can't cope. You know, their whole lives are being wrecked. Because not only is it the question of where they're going to be and the visual impact and all that sort of stuff, the question is, how the hell are they going to get there? You know, and it's not just on arterial roads like the highway.
No.
At some stage, they go off arterial roads onto local roads. They have to go on local roads.
Go on local roads.
They have to go on local roads to get there.
Yeah.
And I, as a dutiful citizen, I went on Monday or Tuesday, I went to the Armidale Regional Council website to look up the agenda for the most recent meeting, and I saw a big slab of text on the res, and I thought, wow, at last we're going to be told something about what's going on. No. But unfortunately, no, it was. It was a whole lot of stuff about how much money Armidale Council is likely to get when it's all done. Meanwhile, no one has a clue about how we're going to get from here to there, and they do say that getting there is half the fun, but I got a feeling in this case it isn't half the fun at all.
We know when the Sapphire Wind Farm went up in Glen Innes, there was the Pacific Highway, not the Pacific, sorry, the New England Highway was just chock-a-block with these blades and different wind farm parts travelling slowly by, well, very long escorted trucks.
I've driven around all those streets between Armidale and Burralong, and the thing that strikes you most of all is how narrow they are. Now, they're not wide enough to allow these things to go and other vehicles to go the other way. It's going to result in massive stoppages, and I hope that anyone listening won't have a medical emergency while one of these things is going past, because
you won't be able to get around it.
You won't be able to get around it.
In fact, you can't. I remember I was driving and I was a bit absent-minded up the hill from Tamworth, and I really, for some reason, I probably shouldn't admit this in public, but I will, I overtook the escort vehicle just thinking it was an ordinary vehicle, and you should have seen them go ape. They saw me overtaking them and I thought, oh shit, I'm behind one of these huge blades.
Yeah.
Anyway, I quickly adjusted and got out of the way, but because they're so common, you know, that at that point they were just there all the time. And you're right, you can't overtake.
You can't overtake them. Yeah.
And I know that for a fact because I did.
And the thing is that it's not bringing us power. Because the power that's generated has to be then carted back into the grid, which means it's got to go down back to the Hunter Valley to go into the grid there by transmission wires.
And so and I think people need to understand that we're not generating power.
I saw this silly expression in the council agenda, engine room development as a consequence of it. There's no engine room development here because the power's generated here and then it's carted back with another line, that's the transmission towers, back down to the Hunter Valley.
It's very interesting, and I know you have covered the issue about nuclear as well, which is a completely different scenario of, you know, drop-in nuclear power stations next to the demobbed coal-fired power stations and using the existing transmission line. So we're really, you know, in the middle of quite an enormous technological sort of battle lines, really, aren't we?
It is, and you know, I'm left with a feeling all the time with these sorts of things that we're talking about fads. If everything becomes a fad and no one's doing their homework as to how it should be done.
It's if anybody is interested in following this up, I saw and the you've on your in your first paragraph you mention, of course, that Squadron Energy, which is owned by Twiggy Forrest, Andrew Forrest, and Squadron Energy is the proponent for the Burralong Wind Farm and this 300-metre high things, and it was very interesting to see the almost hysterical delivery that Andrew Forrest, Twiggy Forrest, had in relation to defending the renewables only and very anti-nuclear. Why? He put no argument about why nuclear was, you know, unacceptable.
If it's that obvious, why can't they be transparent about it? If it's that good, why can't they tell us what's going, what roads are going to be used, what properties are likely to be used? So people get what people want more than anything. People by and large aren't greedy. People just want certainty in their lives. They want to know that the life they're leading now will be more or less the same in 12 months' time, that sort of thing.
Or if there is change, how they're going to cope with it.
How are they going to cope with it? They want certainty.
And the other issue that you raise in this lead story on the front page of issue 38, number 38, edition number 38, is of the Armidale Times, is where's the consultation with the Aboriginal
owners? That was only recently that what property was bought on crowdfunding.
That's right. The Nawara Aboriginal Corporation finally got a little bit of land back.
Yeah.
And it's in that area, I think, isn't it?
It is. Yep.
So they will be impacted. I'll just read this a little bit. And turbines are only the start. So there's the building of these turbines, but also for energy to get to the grid, where will the transmission lines and hubs be located and what of their construction and impact? How much secondary traffic will there be, and will the land clearing be monitored and all that sort of thing? And, of course, the same problem that Walker is already really grappling with is now hitting the Armidale region, which is who are the people who are doing private contracts to sell their land to these energy companies or lease their land? This is all, you know, commercially locked up in a commercially in confidence sort of secrecy. But it's very much impacting public goods, the public, so.
Well, you know, you only have to envisage 300 metres tall. Now, I've seen an artist's impression of what that, how that relates to a person, to a single-storey house. And it's breathtaking.
300
metres.
300 metres. High
masts. That's like Armidale is 3,000 feet up.
Mm.
That's a third of the height of above sea level of Armidale is going to be added on top. So when you're sitting in your very pleasant house in Brown Street or...
You'll be seeing them.
Or Mann Street, you'll look up there and you'll see these monstrosities right along the horizon. That's what you're going to see.
I have to say, I did go to a very early, it's probably 18 months ago now, open session at the, I think it was at the bowling club, and I was absolutely shocked. I gave them a piece of my mind about the 300 metres. I just said, you're joking. You can't possibly be serious about that size of construction.
Well, I think the thing is, that gets back to my original point.
Yep.
It's only 300 metres because there's no prevailing winds up here. They've got to go right up in the sky to get the winds. Yeah. Whereas, in fact, down the south of the state where there are prevailing winds, they've steered well clear of it for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's very, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And anyway, and as you say, the local government, I mean, the local government response is, we can't do anything about it, so we're going to try and ensure that we get some kind of a community contribution back from these, because otherwise there's nothing for our region. Absolutely nothing.
What I'm saying is that they should be, that's going to be down the track, by all means, think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But what about trying to minimise the disruption in the interim? Instead of saying we're going to get, you know, $15 million as compensation for the disruption, how about a little less disruption by being open about what is going on?
That's right. You can't
tell me that the state government and our local councils are not even at this as we speak talking about what is the right way to bring this stuff up. They're doing it right now.
Mm.
They must be doing it right now.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's it. We don't know. We're not told.
And that's the problem. Yeah. So, got another great story on page two, Rod.
About tenants.
Yeah.
I should say, I went and interviewed the woman who runs the tenancy service in Armidale, and I must say, she's a Pankhurst.
Yes, I saw that.
She's a Pankhurst, and she married into the Pankhurst family.
So Kerri-Anne Pankhurst is
She's not a blood Pankhurst, but she's an in-law Pankhurst.
To Emmeline Pankhurst, one of the original.
Exactly, and I said to her when I interviewed her, she said how hard it was at her job. You know, there's a lot of the sort of thing. So I said to her, I hope you don't throw yourself under horses.
No, or chain yourself. What they did chain themselves.
They smash windows.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. Listen, the issue here is, I actually didn't know that the extent, I knew this was happening up in Gara, but I didn't know it was an Armidale thing, that there's no fault, no reason.
Evictions
of people.
If they're on a lease. Now, there's a very fine distinction. I'm not quite sure what it is. That there are some circumstances in which they doesn't apply, but generally speaking, they can terminate a lease. And the interesting thing is, this is how bad it's got.
Yep.
The figures she gave me were that in the past 12 months, there were 1,239 applications by landlords here to the court to terminate leases.
That's a lot, isn't
without
it?
Without any explanation whatsoever. And, they're out in the street. They're out in the street.
That was in the 2022-23 year, 1,239 applications for no reason
why evictions
to
people on leases.
Mm, mm.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, tenants have the right to go to the court for, you know, where they've been let down by the landlords. There were 18 in the same time, 18 from tenants to do work which the which the landlord was contracted to do. And as she went on to say, it's so tough these days that people will pay for it, even though it's the landlord's responsibility, they'll pay for it themselves to keep the roof over their head.
In other words, to keep a very low profile with their landlord and with the real estate so that they don't attract any...
Even things like, you know, tree roots getting into sewer pipes and stuff like that, which is external to the property.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the housing crisis is very big here. And I guess if you evict somebody for no reason and you can then put that, refloat that property on the market at a much higher rate.
That's what's happening. Yeah. They get the boot and then it's, well, they might sell it, but invariably what will happen is that because I think they're to get a higher tenancy paid, they just boot them out and put new ones, advertise it at a higher rate.
That's right. Now, you've also... So look, that's a really useful thing to know about. But there's some good news and some bad news. The good news is the Good Samaritans.
The Good Samaritans. Now, I had heard about this Meals for Armidale.
Yep.
And I went sniffing around the place and I went out to the Adventist Church and talked to Bruce Stewart out there.
Yep.
And he told me where to find them. Mm. So I went down there on a Thursday night at 5 o'clock. Mm. And I saw all this gathering of all people in the mall on, because there was no sign up there or anything like that on the post office steps.
Right.
And then at 6 o'clock, suddenly all these people appeared carrying parcels and bags.
Yep.
And it was cooked, prepared, hot food in takeaway containers and garden produce. Mm. And all these people, like, they just jumped to, like, it's been going since last November.
Oh.
And they don't eat the meals in the mall because, you know, you'd have problems with pests and all that sort of stuff, and they don't have a license to do that. Mm. But they take the meals away and go home, and they've got hot meals and fresh vegetables.
Wow. Yeah.
It's terrific. And the fact is they just did it themselves. I talked to it's a couple who organised it, name of McLeod.
Yep.
And friends of theirs. They met, they're only recent arrivals in Armidale, and they met in... pub trivia nights, got to know people there, and they all sort of said how tacky everything is now and how they have no power over everything, and they thought, well, you know, you can't even go anywhere and get a decent meal without putting your hand in your pocket and shelling out a heap. So they said, well, why don't we do something about it? So it doesn't... They're smart enough to organise it in such a way as to minimise the cost of themselves.
Yeah.
They won't take money.
Right.
They will take... offers in kind that they can then pass on.
Right.
But I thought it was one of the most admirable things I've seen in a long time.
It really is extraordinary. So if there it is on a Thursday night at 6 o'clock, they turn up with all this takeaway
food
terrific. Containers. And look, I was down at an event in Tamworth towards the end of last year, which was called... It was called Homeless Hub or something like that, and it was a sort of run by all the services, but part of what that was it's like an expo for people who are sort of on the margins, I suppose, financially, and there was handouts of vegetables there. I travelled down with another person from Armidale, and we were there about an hour and a half or two after the opening.
Yeah.
I think there were a few pumpkins left, but everything else had already gone. And I heard the organisers saying, we can't believe it. Everything just went so quickly, because people are so desperate even for perishable food.
Yeah.
Like, you know, garden produce and stuff like that. But anyway, look, if you want to know more about this, or you have excess, you know, you have the means of giving donations, but
6 o'clock, just bring it along to the stage in the mall, and they'll gladly accept it.
Right, but interestingly, not money. They're not
No, they won't touch money.
So that's good to know.
And we should also mention the fact the cinema is at this stage is going to close.
Yep. So,
and I'm absolutely shocked because there are so little for people to do here who can't get away. Those who can get away can go to Melbourne or Bali or go walking in the Dolomites or cruising in the Aegean, those who can. But those who can't, that's one of the few things left to them. And I was expecting in the council agenda to something to be on it about it, you know, because after all, the council does say that they are the leaders of the community.
Yeah.
I would have thought that was one of the most obvious things to show some leadership on. That it, not to say that they necessarily had to pay council money, but to at least recognise that, in fact, this is a devastating loss to the Armidale community.
Yeah.
And it's passed without notice.
I think public people can't believe that it's really going to happen, actually.
Well, that's why we decided to run. We didn't have... It's an absolute shock. It's a shock, and it's worse than a shock. It's shocking.
It is shocking. So, UNE Life's David Schmuder has basically said that UNE is planning to no longer continue the cinema after 2025. I think.
Yeah, it's February next year, I think.
Oh, so it's very soon, actually.
Very, very soon.
Very, very soon. Yeah.
And you know, if in fact what's required is trying to find another operator, well, the council should at least let it be known that it hopes and expects another operator to come. To say nothing is indicative of saying, well, no one here cares, you know, don't exercise any energy on your part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, moving right along, as they say, once again, we get to the good old rail trail, and the question arises there, As apparently it's going to be resolved down in Macquarie Street by about the middle of the year. And people sort of think, oh, ho-hum, ho-hum, ho-hum. But it's a bit more than ho-hum because...
it's not ho-hum at all because if that...
Who's going to maintain it? Who's going to pay for the maintenance?
If this rail trail happens, there'll be no opportunity for at least 30 years for any kind of resumption of rail transport north of Armidale. That's
you know
absolutely...
Margaret, do you know what the really bizarre thing is?
Yeah.
That
we've got a really good train line there. And
these...
No service.
The propellers on those turbines coming up from made in China, I might say, and dropped off in the port of Newcastle, then transported by low loader all the way up here, they actually have to cross the old railway. Anywhere they go, they've got to cross the railway line. So where does that fit in with the rail trail? Well,
it's going to be a 10 to 20-year building cycle, all of this.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's it. And on the back, we've got Deirdre Rickards. Deirdre Rickards has been an inspiration in the musical scene here in Armidale for 50 years.
50 years.
50
still
years.
Still going strong. Yeah.
And there's an interview with her about the things that motivated her, and also she submitted her own review of a book written by one of her former pupils, Bill Kempster, who was the son of a well-known identity in Armidale, Gretel Kempster.
Ah. Oh. I gave Gretel a lift home, I think, not so long ago.
Yeah, Bill is Gretel's son. But the part I like best of all is she was, when I talked to Deirdre, she was extolling the enthusiasm of her students at Armidale High, including Bill.
Yeah.
And I might just read this
paragraph. Mm.
So committed to excellence were those students that they once persuaded Deirdre to take the class by train to Sydney to hear Yehudi Menuhin and the Bath Festival Orchestra play Edward Elgar's Introduction and Allegro, one of their set pieces for the HSC examination. That was in the Sydney Town Hall. They also managed to sleuth out that by staying at the nearby Gresham Hotel in Druitt Street for $7 a night, they could keep a lid on costs. So it was down and back in 2 days for the love of music.
I
love the Gresham Hotel. It was a great place.
Yes, yes.
Fabulous place.
Yeah.
Great place for chicken and chips, let me say.
So, look, this is a really lovely story about all the work and the life's work that Deirdre Rickards has done for, to promote, and much more than that, promote classical music in Armidale, but also to so many amazing young people have gone on to professional careers in classical music, in no small part due to Deirdre's, you know, devoted and sometimes annoyingly devoted
It's probably a good time to say here that I was told by the manager of Meals on Wheels, Karen Williams, who had previously worked at the Conservatorium of Music, that one of Deirdre's colleagues up there, Wendy Huddleston, who is also a pillar of music here, has just recently died Canberra.
And that is an enormous loss. Wendy, I think, has had a bit of a long illness, and the loss of Wendy is a real loss to Armidale. She's been was such an amazing contributor and teacher and conductor in classical music in Armidale for many, many years. So, yeah, our sympathies to Wendy's family and an extraordinary contribution to Armidale.
That's our issue this month, available from Cars News Express. Express and JJ's news agency.
And if you know somebody who gets Meals on Wheels, it comes wrapped up in with the Meals on Wheels delivery in it.
Well, Karen Williams is a total enthusiast. I tell you what, she's one tough woman. I tell you, if I run a day or two too late from when I tell her that I will be delivering it, I soon hear about it.
Oh, she's terrific, terrific. And, of course, that's another one of Armidale's wonderful community institutions is the Meals on Wheels building and all the people that, and all the volunteers that work from there at the showground. So they had a little bit of a hiatus during the show to let the show people get
How
on
How was
things.
The show?
Well, I think the show went wonderfully. I was
got
there
terrible on cloudburst on the Friday night.
They had that pretty exciting storm on the Friday night. But then the firework, it was the whole town could see the fireworks on the Saturday night, and I was manning a stall in the morning and at the showground, and it was very busy, very, very busy. It was almost, I'd call it almost frantic, and there was.
Did you get a Dagwood dog?
I didn't have time to have a Dagwood dog. I was too busy talking to people about, to be honest, trains.
Trains.
Yes.
I wonder why.
Trains North had a stall there in the Western Pavilion, and we're signing up new members madly, actually.
Oh, that's good. I think, just compliment Trains North, I think this is the first vibrant sign of stirring in the community, of people thinking about the future. The whole sort of suffocating atmosphere is, don't think about the future, just think about what's in front, what's happening now. In other words, just don't do anything, we'll take care of it, just leave it to experts like us. When in actual fact, people used to think about the future, and this is great. I think it's to be commended.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely the case, that and Trains North now has groups in Glen Innes, Tenterfield, Gyra, they're part of Trains North, but they're their own group as well. So it's growing quite quickly. Yeah. So anyway, of course, I was there for part of the time. I'm still looking for one of my camp chairs. If anybody's seen it,
no, it's not in my house. I didn't take it.
Oh, thank you so much for coming. And
it was an absolute pleasure.
We can't wait. And look, we need to tell people that you really love to get contributions.
We do. We love contributions.
And all the details of how to do that 500 words is the maximum.
Yeah, but anyway, nice 300 or 400 word story goes down well.
Yeah, and a photograph. And yeah.
You know the person who was the author of the one on nuclear energy, don't you?
I do.
Yes, that's right.
I do, yes. Yeah. The 21st day of the preceding month is the
well,
date.
You know, it's flexible, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the fact of the matter is that the ends of the month move around so much. Like at the moment, we're stuck with all these, because of Easter and that, all these short, and February and then Easter, all these short months. So it must be flexible.
Oh, listen, I think the other thing to note is that the Armidale Times doesn't print itself, it costs money, and so you do have a gold coin price tag on these, but not everybody pays that. There are donation boxes, and we just really
encourage people to help out.
Yeah. Oh, that's fabulous, Rod.
Okay, Margaret, it's been a pleasure.
To, seeing you next month.
Okie dokie, I'll see you then.
And, everybody out there.
Yep.
Think of the back page is usually devoted to cultural and heritage items.
It is, yeah.
I might say one.
It's really interesting. Ginny wrote one on the Teachers College just recently, and some listeners might remember the name of Terence Hunt. Mm-hmm. Terence Hunt used to run all the school music things and all those sorts of things. Anyway, Terence Hunt's son was in my year at North Sydney, and he lives up on the Sunshine Coast.
Right.
Anyway, he and my wife have been in an intense conversation or email conversation because my wife's mother was a student of the Teachers College when Terence Hunt was a lecturer there.
Ah!
And he ran a production of Patience, you know, the Gilbert and Sullivan thing, Patience.
Yeah.
So Chris sent down all the, you know, the programs and that sort of thing for that Patience thing, and lo and behold, it turned out that all the people who were in the cast were all friends of Ginny's mother.
Ah!
Who went to school with her down in Currie. And Maitland.
Well, you know, the Teachers College keeps giving because a lot of people come back to Armidale either to visit for reunions, the Teachers College, or sometimes they go, well, let's all move back here because it's an easier place to live as you're getting a little bit older, and it's familiar. So it's quite an interesting source of ongoing networking.
Yeah.
So fantastic. All right.
Okay.
Good on you, Rod.
We're on our way, Margaret.
We'll look forward to I've got to play music and two sponsorships and whatever, but it's just lovely to see you, Rod. Thank you so much for coming, and all the best. See you next month.